I now can sing since I've been redeemed.
I'm on the everlasting rock.
I faith in Christ, my Redeemer King.
I'm on the everlasting rock. Then roll, roll, billows roll. I'm on the everlasting rock of ages. Roll, roll, billows roll. I'm on the everlasting rock.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this edition of The Voice of Hope. I'm J. Mark Horst, your host. If you've tuned in the last few weeks, our executive director, Anthony High, has been telling you about some of the changes that are coming to our program. These changes are temporary, but they begin today. And that's why you hear my voice now, at the beginning of the program, and not in the teaching time. I will take a break from the Bible teaching for several weeks. During this time, Arlen Horst will provide the content from his series from the Old Testament Book of Ruth. He and Anthony will use a format that's a bit different than what you're accustomed to, but I'm sure you'll find it informative and worthwhile. They will also share the hosting responsibilities between them. These changes are all part of the transition plan we're implementing for the role of Bible teacher at the Voice of Hope. While I do plan to continue as the primary Bible teacher for a few years, we're taking preliminary steps to prepare for the time when I no longer fill that role. So, as these changes take place, your feedback is crucial. We really do want to know your thoughts and opinions on our programming, especially the change in format from a monologue to a dialogue. Whether you like or dislike the changes, please let us know. Your feedback is essential. Right now, to set the stage for Arlen's teaching, I will read Ruth chapter 1 and verses 1 to 14. Now it came to pass, in the days when the judges ruled, that there was a famine in the land, and a certain man of Bethlehem, Judah, went to dwell in the country of Moab, he and his wife and his two sons. The name of the man was Elimelech, the name of his wife was Naomi, and the names of his two sons were Mahlon and Chilion, Ephrathites of Bethlehem, Judah. And they went into the country of Moab and remained there. Then Elimelech, Naomi's husband, died, and she was left with her two sons. Now they took wives of the women of Moab. The name of the one was Orpah, and the name of the other Ruth. And they dwelt there about 10 years. Then both Mahlon and Chilion also died. So the woman survived her two sons and her husband. Then she arose with her daughters-in-law, that she might return from the country of Moab, for she had heard in the country of Moab that the Lord had visited his people by giving them bread. Therefore she went out from the place where she was, and her two daughters-in-law with her, and they went on the way to return to the land of Judah. And Naomi said to her two daughters-in-law, "Go, return each to her mother's house. The Lord deal kindly with you as you have dealt with the dead and with me. The Lord grant that you may find rest, each in the house of her husband." So she kissed them, and they lifted up their voices and wept. And they said to her, "Surely we will return with you to your people." But Naomi said, "Turn back, my daughters. Why will you go with me? Are there still sons in my womb that they may be your husbands? Turn back, my daughters, go. For I am too old to have a husband. If I should say I have hope, if I should have a husband tonight and should also bear sons, would you wait for them till they were grown? Would you restrain yourself from having husbands? No, my daughters, for it grieves me very much for your sakes that the hand of the Lord has gone out against me." Then they lifted up their voices and wept again, and Orpah kissed her mother-in-law, but Ruth clung to her.
One of the things that's special about the book of Ruth is it portrays Jesus as a kinsman redeemer. But, like, what's a kinsman redeemer? Exactly. I didn't know I have one of those. Like, what is it?
Also, with the book of Ruth, it ties into a broader story. We can look at the book of Ruth and think about Ruth at the time of the judges. Okay. And it makes a lot of sense in that context. but it's much bigger than that. It fits with God's storyline. One of those ways is through the kinsman redeemer, which we're going to explain that more as we go along. And there's other cultural context things from the Jewish culture that if we understand their culture and take the time to enter in, it makes a lot of sense and it kind of pops out. As we go through, we want to do that. As a way to enter into their culture, I have this illustration that I want to tell you about, which I think you'll get it, but you have to be in this culture. So imagine you're living at your house and this emergency comes up. You automatically think, I'm going to dial 911. And you dial 911. The people on the other side find out.
This is 911. What is your emergency?
Yep. What do you need? Police, fire truck, ambulance. And you don't think twice about those three words. Mm-hmm. You know exactly what every one of those words mean. Describe your need, describe your situation, and they come out to your house. And most people, yeah, we know that because it's our culture. We grew up with it. We were around it. We don't need any explanation. But now, rewind 2,000 years or fast forward 2,000 years.
Or simply move to a different place. And
exactly.
It's like 911. Like,
what's call?
My phone doesn't work.
What's an ambulance? What's a fire truck? Is that a truck that brings fire or what? But we have the context. And so as we go through the Book of Ruth, there's many situations like that where she says something and she gets it. It's her culture. This is the way they do it. It's normal. And we read it and be like, what do you mean get married to your brother? But it was part of who she is. And so we want to try to take the time to enter into those things. And it's just want to clarify that at the beginning before we dive into Ruth chapter 1.
Yeah, going into a culture like that and trying to figure that out, it really runs into some challenges. So I'm curious what you have for us here in looking at that. If I remember right, Ruth, she actually kind of had a hard life. It was a hard story.
It is a hard story for Ruth and a hard story for her mother-in-law. So the Book of Ruth obviously starts out with Elimelech and his wife, Naomi. And today we're going to look at chapter 1, review chapter 1, but like the takeaway, what does it mean for us? What's the point?
Sure.
If I were to sum it up in a sentence, I'd say life will be difficult, but we must be real and move toward God. Hard things come, hard times, part of every one of our stories. How we respond to those hard times is what makes us or breaks us. And so Naomi, Ruth give us a great example of being honest with where they're at and then moving toward God. And so that's the challenge for us. And we're going to keep that in mind as we move through the lesson. I divided it into three sections. The first couple of verses, it's a hard life. Next, a hard choice, a hard decision. And then lastly, looking at the hard reality. Three hards kind of emphasizing that life is difficult. Hers was and ours will be as well. But our response to that is huge.
Is what we do with it.
Right. Yeah. Looking at the first section of verses, first five verses, in Ruth chapter 1, he starts out, when the judges ruled. And right there, we have context for the story because we know the story of judges and we know how people did what was right in their own eyes.
Yeah. Ruth follows judges, right? Like even in the order of the books of your Bible, Ruth comes right after that. I mean, I don't know about you, but when I think of the way the Judges ends, it sounds a lot like Sodom and Gomorrah. Like, you know, they were basically doing the same things.
And it also reminds us of our times. When people do whatever they want, whenever they want, that sounds like my culture.
Well, it sounds like fun, doesn't it?
Right. Who are you to tell me what to do? I want to do what I want to do, and no one can tell me not to. And so we get it. We understand that because it's kind of where we're at. And so this time of the judges is the setting. Bethlehem is the place. And we recognize that name, like, oh yeah, Bethlehem, that's where Jesus was born. And most of us have heard what that means, city of bread. But Ruth starts out where it wasn't a city of bread.
So
there was
empty.
A famine. It's empty. The city of bread didn't have bread. And of course, this is Old Testament. So when there's a famine, you know where it comes from. It comes from God. If you look in Leviticus 26.
You're saying it's a punishment. They were being punished.
That's what it was connected to. Because as they were faithful, then God would send the rain and send the harvest. And so when there wasn't, it always caused this introspection, like, what are we doing wrong? What's happening?
Well, wouldn't oftentimes they were being punished for worshiping gods other than Yahweh or other than God. And so most of those were fertility gods, like, they were worshiping them so that their crops did grow. and God's actually punishing them.
For worshiping the wrong God.
Yeah, for worshiping another God.
Right.
And so, yeah, here they are experiencing a drought, I guess.
Yep.
Or somehow there's a lack of bread in the house of bread.
Yep.
Is that what you're saying?
It's kind of an interesting, ironic twist right at the beginning of the story. And so Elimelech makes the difficult decision to move to the land of Moab.
Where was Moab?
Moab was east of the city of Bethlehem. It was on the other side of the Dead Sea, so they had to go north or south
to get to the Dead Sea. So that makes me think of all throughout Scripture, when people go into exile, they go east. Was it kind of like they themselves were going into exile?
That's a brilliant question. We know who Moab was.
Okay.
Remember Lot and his daughter?
That was
Moab
Lot's
was the son.
Son, but it was through an incestuous relationship.
Right. And we know Moab, like God has some rough things to say about Moab in other sections of the Old Testament.
So there was a number of things that that God had said that he would punish them. He called them, his wash pot, or place to throw his shoes.
Right.
And so it was like not a place that they enjoyed. And Chemosh was their god. Am I saying that right?
Chemosh. Chemosh. I'm not a Hebrew expert either.
Right. And so that was the one where they burned the children. They passed them through the fire. So it was a child sacrifice.
Right. And so Elimelech chooses to go there.
He says, I'm going to go there. Was there food?
There was food there, but was it wise for him to do that or not is the question.
That's a good question.
And so I go to both sides because he was leaving the country where God was, going to this other country where God was not. But at the same time, maybe he recognized in Bethlehem that they ain't going to turn back to God anytime soon. These people are walking away from God, and maybe he saw that and decided to do what he thought was best for his family. There's some people that are harsh critics of Elimelech, and like, he should have never done that. And yeah, I'm not quite there. I don't feel like I know him well enough to make a judgment call, but it's not our job either necessarily, but it's an interesting thing to think about.
So it's hard to say whether he was punished for going or what all happened and transpired in the story was just the course of life.
Right.
It's kind of hard to say.
Right. It's interesting to think about.
He was taking a risk by going.
It was risky.
Yeah. I mean, you think about it, so what's going to happen to your children? You're going out. You're leaving your community. You're going to somewhere where they don't know God.
And so here the family is in Moab. Elimelech dies. So Naomi is there with her two sons. They marry women from Moab. And then they die.
So if I'm not mistaken, Elimelech wasn't all that old because if he died and the boys had not yet married,
right?
He probably is maybe our age.
Yeah.
Well, that's scary.
Okay. There's room for some age variation there,
sure.
But younger gentlemen.
Yeah.
Children not yet married, and they got married. So that puts them in a certain age bracket. But then they pass away before there's grandchildren. And so here's Naomi left in a foreign country without any of her family. That's where I want to think about, call us back to life will be difficult. And here she was at a hard spot in her story, very hard. And that's how our lives are. All of us has a hard something, disease, death, depression.
Some point in life, you will hit a spot that's painful.
Yep. That's not a question. The question is, what will our response be? And I think Naomi provides us an exemplary response of how we should go through difficult times. And she's honest about it. But here we see what's playing into her hard life. And now I'd like to look at the next section of verses 6 on through 18. She does what she knows best. She heads for home. At least there she knows the customs. At least there she is familiar with the people and knows what to expect and knows how old ladies are taken care of. And so she does what's safest, and she heads for home. She's not the same person. She's been through a lot. A lot has changed. She makes the hard choice to go back to her home country. And her daughter-in-laws begin the journey with her. You're our mother-in-law. We're going along.
I guess the part of the culture there is that they would have been living in with her. Like, they would have been living together as one family unit.
Mm-hmm.
And so now they're stuck together. The poorest of the poor. Because there's nobody to provide, and probably no land to go with it.
Right. She's heading home, and I'm sure she's thinking about what her daughters-in-law are going to face back in this country. So she stops and says, look, you guys just go home. She doesn't want them to go through what she's going through. She doesn't want them to experience this unknown place, unknown country, unknown everything. So she encourages them, just go home. And, you know, God bless you as you go, which is kind of ironic because she knows that's what's true, but it's the same God that is not blessing her. She wishes God's best on them. Well, I believe she believes it, but she sure isn't feeling it.
I believe it, but I don't feel it.
Yep. And, you know, was she feeling God's condemnation for leaving Israel, for her children marrying foreign wives? Was she feeling
that? How could you not? I mean, like, that had to be painful. I lost my husband and my two boys. Yep. You had to take some blame. Like, it's almost natural, just like it was my fault.
Right. But was it?
Well,
and from our perspective, like, we know the rest of the story. And then the challenge is for us when we go through those hard times, is it my fault? Is God judging me for this? Which, yes, we entertain that question. Mm-hmm. But many times that's not what's going on. We don't think that's what's going on here when we know the rest of the story. But yes, we understand how she was feeling, could have been feeling that, probably feeling that very much. Very hard time, but a good challenge for us. And so while she's headed back through, she gives her daughter-in-laws this speech. And this goes back to the illustration at the beginning about understanding their culture. She says, like, if I had another son, would you marry him? And we read over that and be like, what's that mean?
Yeah. And earlier you said brother, but it actually would be brother-in-law.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. But I guess in some ways it almost would be like a brother. I think some cultures actually refer to the uncles or the brother-in-laws as more brothers.
Right. And that comes from Deuteronomy chapter 25. And we see that in the New Testament where the Pharisees are questioning Jesus about the woman whose husband dies and marries her brother and marries, like, it happens 7 times.
Yeah.
Whose wife is she going to be in the resurrection? It's understanding what Naomi was talking about to help us understand why she said this. And so, you know, if she would go have another child, she's telling Orpah and Ruth, you're not going to wait for him to grow up and marry him.
It's going to be another 20 years. It's going to be 18 years or whatever it would be.
Right. And so she refers to that custom and releases them from it. Like, that's not expected. Just go home to your people and live your life.
At least you'd have another opportunity to be a mother,
start over,
to get taken care of.
Mm-hmm. And then in verses 14 to 18, Orpah returns. Ruth stays with her and makes this beautiful declaration, which is probably the most famous passage in Ruth, which we're not going to look at that now. But next week, we want to just look at those two daughters, two choices. Let's go into the last section of chapter 1, verses 19 to the end of the chapter. And this is the hard reality. We saw Naomi's hard life, a hard choice that she made to go back to her homeland. And now she arrives back in her hometown, and this is the hard reality that she's dealing with. Again, back to the cultural and understanding the customs. Like, when she comes into the town of Bethlehem, get a feel for the culture, because the whole town was stirred when she showed up, which may possibly point to their previous greatness. Yeah, we know these people.
So actually moving in the middle of a drought might have meant that they had some means to move, like they had some money to be able to leave. Some of the reason people got caught in those situations is because they can't get out. They have no means. Oh, interesting. I never thought of it that they would have been a family with some means.
And yeah, and we don't know, obviously, but the whole town being stirred might point to that.
Or it was a small town and everybody knew everybody.
Well, I think the next statement points to that because the women said, and they're like, is this Naomi? And I picture here the small town feel that gets so frustrating and annoying sometimes, but what she returned to, what drew her back, it was that close-knit and that connection of knowing everybody and everybody knows you, which is an interesting understanding of the Book of Ruth. And it plays into some of the other stories where Boaz tells her to go home. We don't want people to see you here.
All right.
Because he knows they're going to start talking. And then at the end of the book where...
It'd be all over social media.
Where the ladies are just celebrating with her when she has a grandson. So there's good and bad here. Like, I think we can feel the tension in Naomi's life because...
I'm not sure, but
it's familiar. I like it. Yeah. I want this. Mm-hmm. And they ask her, are you Naomi? And she's like, don't even call me that. Don't even go there.
So what did her name mean?
Joyful, happy.
Okay. Pleasant.
Yeah. She says, call me Mara, which is bitter. That makes total sense. I mean, picture somebody, a lady you know named Joy. And she's going through a difficult season in her life. Like, just don't even call me Joy.
I'm not like, Joy anymore.
Right. Like, that's not who I am. Yeah. This is hard. And again, it shows us Naomi as being real with her feelings. Don't even call me that. God has turned his hand against me. Call me bitter.
Yeah, she says that.
Mm-hmm.
For the Almighty has dealt very bitterly with me. She's blaming God for her place. Or blaming herself because he dealt bitterly because we didn't listen.
I'm not sure what was going on in her mind, but I like her honest struggle with it.
Yeah.
If you tell me that she's here in 5 years, that feels not healthy.
Sure.
But in the moment when she's going through it, she's wrestling with it with real feelings and emotion. That's a challenge for us to engage our feelings with what's going on and be real with God. And I think we see that right here with her and how she's handling this hard reality.
Interesting. She's going back to God.
Right.
You know, that's where she's returning to. Even though she feels like God has dealt bitterly with her, but in some ways, maybe she's realizing the consequences of what she did or what they did as a family, maybe not just her. So in this, thinking about Naomi and going back and realizing what God has dealt with her bitterly, you said? So then my question is this, like, is God judging her?
Great question. Are hurricanes, tornadoes, and fires God's judgment? Is disease, is that God's judgment? And
or the question alongside of that, is God judging me for something I did?
It's the same question. And you have to be so careful. I think the cause of Christ has been hurt many times when we come out and say, yes, this is God's judgment. But then as Christians, what about Sodom and Gomorrah? Was that God's judgment?
Well, we would say, yeah.
Obviously, it was. So there are times that God does use these things for his judgment, but not every time do we say that this is God's judgment for this. And you have to be so careful. And you and I, if we're going to say that this is God's judgment, you had better know for sure, and you better have a relationship with whoever you're proclaiming that to.
And some of it is that we are all judged. We're all sinners.
We're all guilty.
And so we're all guilty sinners. And so in a sense, we are all judged.
We don't point to every natural disaster and say that was God's judgment.
And sometimes those are good wake-up calls.
Absolutely.
You know?
But when it comes to this whole thing of, was God judging Naomi? That's not for me to say. I'm sure she felt that. She didn't know what was coming in Ruth chapter 2 and 3 and 4. She was in the middle of her story. And same way with you and I, many times we don't know the end. Hindsight is 20/20. I can look back on my story and tell you, yeah, that was God. But in the moment, yeah, that's tough. It's hard.
So was God taking care of her?
Absolutely.
And it was really a real question of judgment. But even in that, God still had his hand there and he was taking care of her.
Which we have the same guarantee.
Right.
That's the challenge that we're left with. Naomi facing this hard situation, just being real and raw with her emotions. And it's okay. That's where she is. I would like to say, though, it doesn't end on a bad note. It ends with the beginning of the barley harvest. And that's a positive thing.
Because things had actually grown and matured. And
right. Totally the opposite from verse 1. Where there's a famine, now there's food. And that sets the stage for chapter 2.
There's bread back in the house of bread.
Right. Okay, so we have a hard life. We have Naomi's hard decision. And then we have her hard reality when she returns back to her home. These three hards all helping us see that life is hard. Life is difficult. But it's through those hard times that we must be real and move toward God. When we're experiencing those hard times, move toward him. Press into him. And that's a challenge I'd like to leave with us.
That's very good. Would you say also the promise then is at the end, there will be bread back in the house of bread?
Not always in this life, I don't think. That's tough.
But God does promise that in the end, we would say in heaven.
Yeah, he wins. At the end of the story, he wins. I don't know how my story is going to be written. We don't know how yours is going to be written.
No, that's very good. Thank you for joining us here today. We've enjoyed looking at the book of Ruth. Come back again, and we'll dig in a little deeper.
Thanks, Arlen and Anthony, for sharing insights from the book of Ruth and connecting the hardships of Naomi's life with the difficulties that we face. You know, following God isn't easy, but like Naomi and Ruth, God has a plan for our lives too. Now, if you'd like to hear this teaching again, head on over to our website, heraldsofhope.org, or subscribe to our podcasts on whatever platform you use. You can also request a weekly email containing a link to the program. That way, you can listen to the teaching at your convenience. Our email address is hope@heraldsofhope.org. This teaching is also being released simultaneously on our YouTube channel, Guide Through the Bible. We urge you to check that out and subscribe so you don't miss an episode. To contact us or send a gift, call us at 866-960-0292 or send your gift by mail to The Voice of Hope, 6183 Lincoln Highway, Harrisonville, Pennsylvania, 17228. And of course, you can reach us by email at hope@heraldsofhope.org. Your prayers are needed, and your gifts are always appreciated. God's grace and your fervent prayers enable us to work together to win the world for Jesus. And remember, don't let a bad experience make you believe you have a bad life. Bad things will happen, but you serve a good God. We'll see you next time, right here on The Voice of Hope.
God be with you till we meet again. By His counsels guide upon you. With His sheep securely fold.